This is the Nicolaris Brewing Podcast with Dan Carey. I am Scott May. Dan is off this week doing Dan Carey things, which he is wont to do. And we have a member of our projects team, Jason Schultz, in with me today. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm doing well. How about you, Scott?
I'm doing really, really good. One of the things I always love is when we get the projects people in here is just kind of seeing what you guys are up to and what you guys have going on. I've talked to Chris, and of course I've talked to Catherine, and they just seem to keep you guys so busy around here. What's your week been like this week?
This week, like most weeks, it's been really busy. We work on a multiple variety of projects. This week we worked on some CO2 reclamation stuff. We're also working on some different things with product improvement, and always a couple of just, basic, for me, infrastructure things, meaning, utilities, whether it's a boiler, refrigeration, steam, heat, water, something like that. There's always a couple of those things going on.
Yeah. Well, what's really cool about that, and I'm glad you brought up the CO2 reclamation stuff, because you have a large hand in a lot of the sustainability practices when it comes to new stuff that's getting put in and things like that. It seems like you have sort of a focus, if not just like it seems like you have an inclination to focus on sort of how is the most efficient way we can do things. Is that born out of like environmental concerns, or is that born out of just a straight up efficiency concern? And is it one of those things where it just happens that the two of them work together?
It's kind of one of those things where a lot of things can, work in a confluence.
Yeah.
Our brewmaster, Dan Carey, he is very big on the sustainability stuff, whether it's water, whether it's the use of primary energy. And that's really a good thing. But also, from the business side of it too, you have to be efficient. You have to use your resources wisely. Mm-hmm. Popular buzzwords are this optimized engineering and, scheduling and planning things right down to the bee's wings. And, there's truth in a lot of that, but there's also one of those you got to have the right list of events.
Yeah.
So efficiency works together with that. Oh, by the way, the brew hall needs more hot water. Well, let's use a heat exchanger. Voila, we're solving two problems with one solution. Yes, it always costs money, but paybacks are there. Sometimes they're harder to see. They're more tangible than others. But, the unforeseen paybacks in the daily production headaches being reduced. Let brewers focus on brewing. They don't need to be focusing on, how much water do I need? My water bottle's empty. Help.
Oh, yeah. And what's really funny about that is it's the stuff you don't think about. But even if it's, not a conscious thing. It's like when you are, at a job that's work, and brewing beer is hard work. It's labor intensive. It's physically intensive. We do a lot of things to sort of maximize ergonomics around here to make sure, people aren't leaving here going, my damn back again, but it's still very labor intensive. And if you have these issues that are just like not a big deal, but reoccurring every day, it's going to take a toll just on you as you're going about your daily work. Just like, gee, I wish this thing wouldn't be like this.
Yeah. A good example is, granted, back injuries are bad. I don't know if anybody's ever had one of those, but they're no fun.
No.
I think everybody has, really. But
You get past 38 and all of a sudden you wake up with a back condition.
Yeah, this getting old thing is for the birds. But anyway, one example of that was, it's a cardboard baler. Oh, that sounds really simple, but the amount of trips that saved people from carrying cardboard, across the packaging floor, across the building. Oh, they just put it in there, put it in the baler, crush it, send it out. We get a little bit of money for the cardboard. I know right now that paper market's kind of in the pooper, so to speak, but yeah. It'll come back, as people understand that. But, and it cuts down to, on how many dumpster loads we have to send to the recycling center. So we bail them, put them on a truck and ship them right to the end user. We're shortcutting the chain. We're not adding four and five stops in the process because we all know logistics cost money.
Yeah.
So just being that way too, it's like, oh, those are simple things that, everybody could do. And these balers aren't that expensive and they sure are handy. I know our packaging people like putting stuff in there because put it in, crush it, no big deal,
Oh, you give some of these guys and girls the new machine and it's a happy day.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Another one of those is plastic pallets. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people use wood pallets for various reasons, but Nicolaris has went to the plastic pallet. In the They don't come back damaged. You're not missing nails. You're not got boards jammed into the bottom of a case. These things are very structurally strong. And there's less cleanup around your palletizer. And the boards that fall off the top don't get wedged in sideways. So you have to unstack the pallet and then pry the board out and then restack it. So our operators, they really like the plastic pallets. They're all pretty much the same size. The warehouse guys, they can stack them up in nice, neat piles. They put them into machines. They run like champs. And that's, you know, it's efficiency. It's morale. I mean, that's a big thing, you know. You know, you're slugging away at a 10 or 11 hour day in the heat and humidity. The last thing you want to do is have to jack and break a pallet board out of a machine just to finish up that last two. I mean, I can't tell you. I don't know if anybody's ever been there, but it's no fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, the one only downside to plastic pallets I can see is no longer having a broken pallet bonfire day. Broken pallet bonfire day was always really cool because you'd see the pile just sort of building up back there. You know what I mean? You're like, all right, it's getting pretty tall now. There's going to be a broken pallet bonfire day coming soon. And I always missed them until I finally caught one where they went out and did it. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, and around a brewery, you got to have a beer with that job. So
yeah, well, you know, deal. I mean, this is the funny thing, like the odd jobs you can end up getting yourself into around a brewery, and who knew tending to the broken pallet bonfire would be one of, but that's a thing of the past now because we have the plastic pallets. But you're right in that these small things you do that fix seemingly a small issue, but it's an issue that if you think about it as, I mean, everyone's worked a job, right? And when stuff's going wrong on the job, like you said, 5-6 hours into a shift, you know, even the best worker in the world is going to be like, I am now frustrated and I'm hating what I am doing at this moment. You know what I mean? It's just human nature. That's how it goes. So solving those little itty, like seemingly inconsequential things that crop up has a huge impact because it keeps people in a mind space of being from, you know, I got to do this to I get to do this, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's a lot of morale. You know, when you step back and you look at it, there are so many little factors, you know. All right, so the time spent dealing with that wood, what else could I be doing? Oh, I could have been watching this line and saved, you know, 5 cases of beer from hitting the floor. You know, that those kind of things. So there's great alternatives to that. And that's just one example. I mean, we've done many, many more things like that around the brewery. We do a lot of automation stuff. We do a lot of remote monitoring. I know it costs money. We appreciate it. We appreciate that Dan and Dev allow us to spend this kind of money. But it does pay back. You know, it's not maybe always right up front, but boy, those 2 or 3 times that, you know, you saved, you know, couple thousand gallons of water or a couple hundred barrels of you know, deaerated water, man, that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah. Big deals. And what seems very interesting about you and your job, it seems like, you know, you guys on the projects team are always, you know, you seem like you have to be kind of at least baseline of a curious sort, because it seems like Dan is constantly coming to you guys with like weird things. Like, what if we wanted to reclaim all our CO2? What if we wanted to turn a warehouse into a freezer? You know, like, how would you do these things? How, you know, and it seems like then it just sort of, you guys just go off into your corner and then come back with like all the knowledge on these things seemingly out of nowhere. Like, how does that go for you when Dan just comes to you and says like, what would you do to reclaim all our CO2?
Yeah, no, Dan's very good at that. He picks up on these things. He's like, huh, I really like this concept. Where can I use it? How can I use it? Can I make world-class beer? You betcha. And some of these things, you know, will catch you like me a few times, like, you want to do what? Okay, let me get back to you on that. I need a few minutes, you know, and granted, I will do a little Google searching.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I got to have a few ideas. But the other part is, you know, one of the things that we do here at the brewery that's, it shouldn't be unique, but it is really unique to a lot of people, is a lot of these processes really aren't complicated. Just because we're in a brewery doesn't mean they're brewery specific. So somebody who's manufacturing something else, baking bread, you can do a lot of these things. So we've got a really good set of vendors that we work with day in and day out, you know, equipment specialists, systems and process engineers, different things. So, you know, we act as kind of the hub. of the wheel here. Hey, I need an expert in CO2 reclamation. All right, so we go out and we find a couple. We pick one that we really like and work with them to do a project. You know, we've had other guys, you know, whether it's our refrigeration plant or our compressed air plant, mm-hmm. we've got these guys. We've worked with them for years here. They know us. We know them. I say, hey, here's what we're looking at. You know, you're the equipment person. So tell me, will this equipment work for this? You know, and then we work into a solution. And that is just unbelievably powerful at times. We've come up with things that's like, you did what? Oh, yeah, we do this, 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 and this. Okay, great. You know, I mean, it is. It's really wonderful. And it shouldn't be unique to New Glarus, but that is the way we run here. And that's one of Dan and Deb's things, like, hey, we can figure this out. Let's just talk to people. We'll grab the information. We'll pick what we need and march on.
So how long have you been here at New Glarus?
I came in 2012.
And what were you sort of doing before this? I know when I was talking to Chris Heiberger, I think he said his first like job out of college on sort of a project thing was like manufacturing bottles for like cleansers and stuff. So it seems like, you know, that people with like an engineering mind tend to come from you know, very unique things. And I think I was talking to one other guy from the Will, maybe, who does sort of on the maintenance side, said he was making like glass of some sort.
Yep. Yeah. He was working at a glass joint.
Yeah.
I started out of college. I worked for a company called ADM, Archer Daniels Midland, based out of Decatur, Illinois.
And oh, Decatur. There you go.
Yeah. you know, the smell of money, they say in that town. Yeah. You know, it was a good company. I learned a lot about grain operations. And then I moved through that company in multiple different roles in, you know, whether I was loading rail cars, unloading rail cars, barges, trucks, pretty much whatever it happened with grain. Moved from a couple of different areas, learned different things, ended up in the Dakotas. Working with some other products too, you know, edible beans, you know,
yeah,
Bush's baked beans. I'm telling you, man, I know where they come from.
Well, that's funny with Dan, one of his jobs when he was still like, I think just out of UC Davis or maybe still in UC Davis, was he was working like canning peaches for Del Monte or something like that.
Yeah. I picked green beans one summer on a road crew. That was very interesting. I also worked in a plant that dried honey and molasses for the baking industry.
Oh, right on.
So that's a little unusual. You probably don't find many of those things. But yeah, so I've been around, I can't say I've been around every block, but I've been around a couple of them. And, you know, grain operations, materials, equipment, logistics, operations, safety, health, environmental, a lot of those things. I got a lot of chances to learn stuff in my various roles.
Well, what is it? Is there sort of a commonality between, you know, a manufacturing plant, no matter what it's at its heart, a brewery is a manufacturing plant. That's what it is. It takes raw materials, turns them into beer, puts the beer in a package and sends the beer out the door. Like,
yeah.
Take away everything else. It's like it is a straight up manufacturing plant. So is there like a commonality in all manufacturing plants that you find just sort of is universal? Like this is just how they work.
You know, it really is true that way. I mean, you take stuff in one door, do a little something to it, and send it out to a different door. But yeah, a lot of those are the same. It's the same processes. You know, from an engineering perspective, you're going to heat something, you're going to cool something. Physics doesn't change just because you brew beer or, you know, if you're drying wood. Okay,
yeah.
It's still the same physics. You know, you could be drying hops. You could be processing all that stuff. You could be chopping corn. Moisture is still important. So it's a lot of those things. It's the same processes. Engineering, from that perspective, it's the same things. Heat transfer, cooling, liquid, water. A lot of things have different names,
mm-hmm.
but it's similar processes.
Now, when you're talking about heat transfers, this is something I'm kind of interested in. Because I just don't understand it, right? Like, I just don't get it. So you heat up wort, right? You're boiling water. Yep. You add your stuff to it. You're heating up wort. As that stuff's cooling, you know, heat basically, you know, something that's cooling, you aren't making it cold. You're subtracting the heat. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you guys sort of figure out ways to reclaim heat to turn it back into energy as something is cooling. Is that the basic gist of it?
In a way, yeah. I mean, it really boils down to heat is energy, yeah. And energy wants to get to its lowest level. I mean, these are our basic laws of thermodynamics and all those other good things that we all forgot in college classes here. But
I never made it to the level where they started teaching thermodynamics. I was getting my literature degree. They were like, you just need two semesters of some kind of science. They will give you a stick in this one and you can poke the ground and tell us how dense that is. And we'll count that as earth science. You're good.
All right.
So I took my two semesters of earth science. So like, if you want to know how dense the ground is around Edgewood College in Madison, Wisconsin, I still won't be able to tell you.
All right. I should have had you to help me with my literature class because that didn't work so well for me. But yeah, it's the same thing. Heat. It goes from a high energy to a low energy. It goes from hot to cold or warm to hot. And it's just a transfer.
Yeah.
So nothing is neither created nor lost. It just transfers different forms. And we do that with so many different processes in the brewing. So in the brew hall is where all the heat's added. Everybody's got a burner. So you add heat and you got this hot wort. Well, you can't ferment it at that. You kill all the yeast.
Yeah.
All right. So let's cool it down. Let's transfer that heat into our next makeup water. Oh, yeah, because we got to heat that anyways. So we do a lot of those processes. Same thing in the boil. We take that hot steam vapor because there's a lot of energy in that. Let's make some hot water to make the next brew with. So, you know, we're allowed here, you know, to keep a continuous process, which makes this a lot easier. But it's the same principles. I've got a heat source. I got an energy level. How can I use it?
Yeah.
Yes, you get to a certain point where it's low grade and it's very difficult to use energy. But by that point, it's like, all right, I've done everything I can to utilize it.
My conscience is clear with Mother Nature. My bill is paid. I tried my hardest. To the extent that technology and budgets have allowed me, I have done everything I can do to reclaim all of the energy usage I am putting out there.
Yeah. I mean, brew hall is a great place. We pull energy off the boil. We pull it off the knockout, the cool down. We take our CIP rinse water. We take the energy out of that and preheat brewing water. We also have, you know, in different parts and processes in the cellar where we use heat exchangers, we just plain heat hot water. We take steam using equipment. That condensate that comes off there is kind of in between. If it stays steam, it's not really good. But if it's liquid, it can go back and get reheated. So we pull that off. We make hot water. You know, and brewing sanitation is super important. So always having water and having hot water is just critical, you know, and water too, in a sustainable fashion. Brewing uses a lot of water.
Oh, it does. It just does. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
I mean, you got a 12-ounce bottle of beer. Most of it is water, and we put out a few million cases. So.
Yep. You take that 12-ounce bottle and you put 3.5 next to it. That's how much water is used to make that.
Yeah.
And that's what we're using here in New Glarus. We're about 3.5 to 1, which is, for us, is pretty phenomenal. We're really happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Dan wants us to get a little lower, like everything. I mean, I think we're in world-class territory. I know some places are a lot higher, and there's a few that are a lot less, but you know, everybody's got circumstances. But water is important, and we use a lot of it, by golly.
Well, what's really funny that I always enjoy is, you know, when Kate's talking about these projects, it seems like, you know, something will come up, right? Like, oh, we need a new wastewater treatment plant. Which we did. Mm-hmm. And then you guys got to thinking and got to building. And, you know, I don't think this actually happened, but during the planning process, remember Kate was talking about like, gee, I wish there was some way to put like a turbine in the flow pipe for the wastewater to get to the plant. Cause it's traveling down that hill, and figure out a way to create energy during this process of reclaiming the water. Mm-hmm. And it was just like sort of illustrative of me of the way you guys think about things, and also the freedom sort of Dan and Deb have given you guys and being able to say, is there an out of the box idea that we could potentially try? Does stuff like that come up like often when you guys are thinking about these projects? And again, I want to say, always. I don't think that happened. I don't think we were able to do that, but just that it was on the table is really cool to me.
No, we looked into that. There were just a couple of things like, man, it's close, but there were a couple of parameters like, it's just not quite enough.
Like it's so close to get us our own little power station.
Yeah. But, you know, that technology is out there and it's getting better, you know.
Yeah.
But yes, Dan and Deb have given us the allowance to that. It says, hey, you pitch the idea. You know, it's your elevator pitch. You got your 3 or 4 minutes and either it makes sense or it don't. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's like, all right, let's investigate this a little bit. And another thing that we do here in New Glarus is we use a lot of teams. I'm not an expert in everything. You know what that leads to. But, you know,
I would never want people thinking I'm an expert in most things. Like, no, like you can come to me with like three very specific things. That's what you can come to me for. Go find your other guy for the mathematics.
Yeah. So we'll grab a team of people, you know, whether it's operators, knowledge experts, it kind of all depends on what we're working on, but we'll build a team. And sometimes it's hard.
Yeah.
But the team is like, hey, we can do this. Or you'll say something, hey, let's go down this path. And then somebody from the sensory side will say, no. Okay, there's reason for that.
Yeah.
Let's go the other path. Okay, great. You know, and we do a lot of those things. We do a lot of testing. We do a lot of mock-ups. If you've been to the brewery here, you've had to see our little pilot plant.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like the best because, man, I'm telling you, we're always changing something. Just like every year, the agricultural products change, whether it's the barley, whether it's, you know, the hops. I mean, everything changes, you know, even your ingredients change.
Yeah. I mean, there's always something that sort of needs to be tweaked because there's always something that needs to be compensated for. It seems like in talking to Dan and Deb and in talking to a lot of the team members, you know, you really do just get this impression that like the whole, like running something this big, a manufacturing facility of this size and scope is really just a series of like, all right, we're going to move 12 inches forward. And if we hit a wall, we'll go left. All right, now we're going to move 6 inches to the left. And if we hit a wall, we'll turn right and move 4-5 more inches forward. You know what I mean? Just like finding the path where nothing is stopping you from doing the thing that you want to do, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But the other side of that, too, is every decision has a consequence.
Yeah.
Every up has a down. I mean, it's just nature and natural. But it's one of those, like, all right, let's make an educated decision. No, we're going to go down this path. Great. We went there. All right, let's adjust a little bit. And that's really what it amounts to. There's always that opportunity cost. And sometimes it's greater than you're willing to accept.
Yeah.
All right. You know, but that's a business decision or it's a flavor decision. And, you know, it's one of those things here when we're doing world-class beer, which is what New Glarus has. And if anybody wants to argue that, I mean, that's
that will be it. I will be able to debate my side of that. I have evidence. I have it all stocked in my head. I have evidence up here. I can bust out.
Yeah, exactly. So world class beer. We try to do world class things to make that beer even better.
Yeah,
you know, because you can't. You still have to run a business. At the end of the day, I think there's a quote out there that said something about it. If you can't run the business, then you're just a home brewer.
It's something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
and it's very true. So we try to run the business as effectively and efficiently as we can. And from my perspective, you know, low cost of utilities, that's important because that comes out of every month when you get the electric bill or the gas bill.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're now just like sort of, I think we're on year two of having the CO2 reclamation. Mm-hmm. How is that going? Because I know it was like when it got installed and it got up and running, you know, it was going to be like a step process to get it sort of optimized. So where's our CO2 reclamation at sort of now as opposed to where it started? I know Dan sort of spoken to it. He speaks of new equipment like learning an instrument, right? Like learning a new, like you play the bass. Now you need to learn how to play the guitar. Like it's kind of similar to stuff we've done, but you really have to put the hours in to know what it'll do. So now that you have, you know, 2 years worth of hours in with the CO2 machine, what can it do?
You know, the learning curve is real with new equipment. It's both good and it's challenging, and some days you shake your head. But the equipment's running great. I mean, we're reclaiming, we were upwards in that 80% of our need range, and that's kind of still our target. But it's going to be a little more interesting as our production changes a little bit. Some things use more, some use less, different times of the year. But overall, the plant, it's running well. We're learning where we need to put the TLC.
Yeah.
We're learning what we can get away with, you know, those kind of things. But yeah, it's doing really good. Our quality out of that's gotten better. We are down on the very low bottom of the margins here. You know, we're in, you know, the oxygen come out of there is 2 ppm O2, which is pretty good, but it's still not quite good enough. So we're still working on it. But, all in all, it is working. We've learned a lot about it. We've set up our PMs. We've set up our operating parameters. We've got some different people who can tend to the equipment because it runs 24/7.
Oh, wow.
You know, and, you know, like you and I, you know, geez, at the end of a day, I mean, 8 hours, we'd like to go home. Well, this equipment, that's why we got it here. It runs round the clock. We never give it a break.
And so then we are using a portion of our own CO2 to purge air and do all that good stuff. And are we, I know our trucks of our CO, like how the metric we were sort of using is like, how many trucks of CO2 are we having delivered? And that had been halved at some point or something like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, we went from 2 trucks a week down to 1 truck a month.
Oh, so it's quartered, basically.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That is amazing.
And it depends a little bit on how much we're brewing in different times of the year. There's some different fluctuations in that, you know, and like all things, there's always kind of a cut-in level to where, all right, got a little bit of CO2, but it's not real good. And there's not much. And all of a sudden it gains. All right, let's go. And we give her the berries and away we go. And but it's doing that. We've cut down a lot on that. We still kept our supplier. We still are going to need it. Mm-hmm. But our reliance on buying it is definitely decreased, which has helped us a number of times over the last year, because the supplier there were supply issues.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everybody out here that's brewing knows that.
Oh, yeah. And then Dan was saying, like, you know, when there's supply issues with CO2, you know, your supplier is then sourcing it from different places. So you're never quite sure, you know, because it's like anything else. It varies in quality. It varies in purity. It varies in, you know, what you want to use it for. And I'm sure Dan is probably fairly, you know, fairly rigid when it comes to the things that will get shot into beer.
Yeah, just like every customer that takes a drink of beer, you want good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And we treat it that way too. You know, it's a raw ingredient. We have specifications and parameters just like everybody else on that. Ours are really tight. But yeah, in different suppliers, you know, oh, this come out of an ethanol plant. Great. This one come out of a what? This came out of a power plant? How'd you get CO2 out of a power plant? Okay.
I don't think I want to know. Like, well, then this is why I like talking to people like you, because, like, you know, it would never occur to me, you know, that there's like a Dom Perignon of CO2, right? Like, hey, man, if you want the really good stuff, they got to go to the cabinet, unlock it, and be like, are you sure? Here's the bottle. I'm going to open it now. So it's going to be on the bill. You know, it would never occur to me that there were grades of CO2 that you could buy. Like, the world of that you guys live in is so so wild to me that I just enjoy hearing about that stuff where it's like, oh, yeah, man, they got some bunk CO2 over there. Gee, what happened to them?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great analogy, you know, and everybody that has their thing, you know, you see a lot of this, if you know, you know stuff.
Yeah.
And those things, it's like, yeah, if you know, you know. You know, if you've worked in a food plant, you know, there's some things you don't really want to know what's in a hot dog, but it's in there and it tastes good and it works good on your grill and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, make questions.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, we do take extra pride in that, especially the CO2 and the water and all of our equipment, too. And if you've been here to the brewery, you know how clean it is.
Yeah.
We constantly get compliments on that. So we got a shout out to our packaging teams and cellar teams and every other employee here who keeps the brewery clean, because hygiene is so important in a good flavor.
It really is. And, you know, between, you know, all of the different projects you guys do and all the things you take on throughout the year, there seems to be just two guiding pillars. And is it going to make the work easier for someone in real time, or is it going to make the beer better in real time? Like, now, you know, those seem to be like the two driving motivations for any changes you guys are making. And the fact that you guys are sort of constantly enrolling projects seems to me to indicate how seriously this stuff is taken from, you know, Dan and Deb, you know, on down. It's just constantly being thought about.
Exactly. And those are the super important things. That's why we got people here. You know, people are important. You know, we do a process change. You know, did it affect the flavor? You know, taste panel. Everybody holds their breath. Made it. All right. Oh, bad. You know, I mean,
well, it's like baseball players and brewers are like the most superstitious people. You know what I mean? It's like you just don't go changing a little bit of the routine. If that routine's been working, even it could be like, you could make the case of this is the most inconsequential change anyone could ever make. And it's like, all right, but it's on you if this is different.
Yep. You know, and the total goal is the same consistent beautiful pouring beer at the end.
Yeah.
You know, we know ingredients are going to change. We know weather's going to change. If you've been in Wisconsin, you know, it snowed one day and we've got sunburned the next. And it's the same thing. You know, our ingredients change. So we work on just that consistent flavor. So every time you grab one off a shelf, it's cold, tastes great, tastes the same. I mean, that to us as brewers, that's the compliment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, one of my favorite things about, you know, one of the things I take pride in around here is the Charitable Giving Foundation. And one of the things I really wanted to see with it was, you know, you see, you know, when someone starts up a Charitable Giving Foundation and, you know, you'll see sort of the decision-making process of those is sort of stocked with people from that world. It's very, which makes sense, right? It's all nonprofits. You want people to understand it. But for ours, I'm really prideful of the fact that, you know, the people who are making the decisions on large donations are people from our packaging team, people from projects team, people from maintenance team, people from sales team, people from gift shop team. You know, it's just all in-house folks, and they bring such a fresh perspective on every, you know, request that's coming in, because, you know, it's not just a matter of, oh, well, I know them. I know that organization. Mm-hmm. We've all worked together before. So, you know, what can we do here? You know, it's really sort of taking a, does this make sense to me as a person right now? And coming from my areas of expertise. And one of the things I always really like hearing you talk about is whenever we have like, you know, projects in sort of the space of keeping people in their homes, you know, especially older folks, mm-hmm. We just kick all that stuff to you. Anything that's like building related or like, you know, possibly, you know, you're the one who gets to explain to us why it makes sense. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little about some of the organizations you've been like fostering relationships with that you talk to on a year over year basis?
Yeah. The first one that comes to mind is Project Home.
Oh yeah.
Man, these people are great. And if you're in Wisconsin, you haven't been affected by a group like this. Hopefully there's one coming to your neighborhood, but they help people with a lot of things. One of them's, you know, emergency assistance on your heater in the middle of winter for the elderly.
Yeah.
You know, Project Home, they've got technicians on their staff. That's all they do is emergency calls for low-income people. Mm-hmm. They also do special programs for our veterans. Thank you very much, folks.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. And they also help seniors stay in their home. You know, how many people have had to go in, I need a handrail in the bathroom to help me get up and off the stool?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't do that. But Project Home has people. They have people that can go in. Hey, we're going to spend a day at your house. We're going to upgrade this accessibility stuff. We know where to get the money from. There's also grants out there. They know the paperwork. Because if anybody here has an elderly parent or grandparent, you know, it's a lot harder than it appears.
Yeah. And it's not just as easy. And it's good to have sometimes like a buffer group there. Cause you know, it might not be the easiest thing to be like, you know, Ma, I need to do this for you. Need to install this for you. We got to come up with it, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But a group goes, hey, you know, we'll take care of this for you. Especially when people are, you know, when we're talking about elderly people in a low income who are basically in a position where they either can stay in their home or they have to start spending down all their assets to get Medicaid to go into a home, which never, the longer you can keep an elderly person in their home, like more financially stable, everyone in that family is going to be.
And the more comfortable they are. I mean, everybody yeah. wants to stay in their home, I think. I mean,
yeah.
it's a great thing, you know, and protecting that asset so that you have something says, because everybody knows eventually death will catch all of us.
It's undefeated. It really is.
Hasn't lost yet.
No, I mean, it took out all of the dinosaurs, all of them.
Yeah. So, you know, trying to make that as hospital, you know, it's a quality of life thing.
Yeah.
You know, they've put roofs on, they've put doors in. They also do a project a lot of times for, the fancy word is fenestration, but it's basically airflow and leaky windows. They'll come in and they'll do your windows, they'll do your attics, do all that kind of stuff to weatherize your house.
Keep the heat in,
keep the cold out, you know, reduce that heating bill because of fixed income. Oh man, I got a $200 heating bill. Where does that come from? Oh, so what do I give up? Groceries.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? It's a lot realer than I think people think it is. Cause I mean, when I was working in state politics, one of my bosses was on, you know, the south side of Milwaukee, and it's, you know, you start talking to some of these old people, you know, these old people, and they're like, oh, you know, I maybe there's a problem, but I'll be fine. I'll just keep my heat set to like 62. And it's like, lady, no, come on. Mm-hmm. Let me help you out. We can't have you freezing all winter long just to save the $30 a month, you know?
Yeah. So that's like super awesome. So Project Home, they're out of the Madison area. Shout out to you guys out there. Hopefully jump up and down and go, woohoo.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's one of them. You know, the other one that we paired with, too, is the YMCA. First project with them was an HVAC upgrade. You know, and it was kind of our dipping the toe in the water. And the process is real similar to how the brewery runs. A lot of times we do a real small project because once you try to put the shoe on, you know how to put the shoe on.
Yeah.
But until then, you don't know all these little things that, you know, oh, geez, I got to turn my sock, my heel's upside down, it's backwards, it's too tight, you know, it's too, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's the same process. So we did a little heating system with them, and now our local YMCA, they're building a new building to help with childcare and recreational activities for teens even.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, heck yeah. So the only Wisconsin Giving Foundation really tries to do those things that impact as many people in the community as we can. And we found ways with these groups to do that. And it's the outreach actually is quite amazing because you'll run into people like, hey, they got money for this. And what happened? Well, we built a bridge over a creek so that the Ice Age Trail Alliance could fulfill a walking path that's not on the main road. You know, gets the pedestrians off the street, helps for motorists, pedestrians get to see nature, have a good time. I mean, those guys, they put a bridge or two a year in. That's a lot of volunteer help.
Yeah.
But the Giving Foundation gets buys the materials. We bought the wood. Great. Somebody shows up, you know, pop the old boards off, put the new ones down. Man, they're happy. Have a few refreshments at the end. I mean, it doesn't get a whole lot better now.
No.
Especially for the families, you know. Yeah, no, giving back to community is fantastic.
Yeah, it's good work. And one of the things, like, I've always been impressed with the work you do with the foundation is, like, you'll analyze these grant requests. And, like, I think with the first one we were doing with the YMCA, with the HVAC system, like, with your just breadth of knowledge of sort of these building projects and the different breaks you can get if you use this material versus this material, the sustainability grants, the, you know, all of it, you're able to work with the requester and be like, we've approved your grant, but here's how you can add 10% more on top of it.
Let's because go talk
if you, them. If you take advantage of all these things, mm-hmm. then our, you know, 30 is going to turn into 37 real quick.
Exactly. Focus on energy. I'm going to shout out to those guys. All of you down there too. I think it's Franklin Energy is the other group that I work with. Exactly. You know, simple things, LED light bulbs, motion sensing lights. I mean, those aren't that expensive, but the amount of energy that's saved is fantastic. And yes, a lot of these projects we recommend, or I do give these ideas. You know, focus on energy is really great. There's a few other federal tax incentives or credits.
Yeah.
I don't want to offend the accountants out there because boy, I'll be in trouble. But, you know, those kind of things. And it's all out there. And it's like sometimes like, oh, you can do that. You betcha.
No, you
or can, yeah, you talk just, to your vendor. Here's the five words you need, and then you're good to go.
Well, and it makes sense because, like, if you're running a YMCA, right, no one's expecting you to be as knowledgeable as someone, like a general contractor on this mm-hmm. stuff. Like, no one's expecting you to be like, yeah, no, I know exactly all of the programs for all of the energy efficiency things I could do. I was just trying to schedule racquetball the other day. Like, you know what I mean? I am not a general contractor. I don't understand this stuff. Like, so it's always, I always love hearing those stories when, you know, we can be, you know, a part of the process and not only just a funding way, but also to bring the skills that our individual members sort of have to bear on these things.
Yeah. And the Giving Foundation follows a lot of the principles of the Nuclearis Brewing Company. We might be related, but according to the IRS, we are not related.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of the things that are very similar. You know, we build something out of bricks and mortar, to use the cliche, that is sustainable into the future. Another program, you know, there's one thing that's not being made more of, and that's land right now. So like gathering waters, you know, they're doing into this land stuff. People want to say, hey, I got this most beautiful parcel. I want to donate it. You know, a lot of people like to do that or preserve and say, hey, this is the coolest thing.
Yeah.
So we did a little job with that group where we funded a starter program to where they get people that know how to set these special trusts up because everybody knows that
Oh yeah, just setting up like
you mentioned the word counselor and lawyer, and everybody tenses up.
Yeah, but a land trust is a really good way to conserve land. It really is.
Yeah, and land is important. They're not making any more of it these days.
No,
and it's getting more and more valuable. Look at all the real estate developments. But all of those require, a park or a green space. And people like to say, hey, my green space is going to be there for my kids and their kids and so on. So they built this group to where they're going to teach these counselors and some legal staff, all right, here's what we need to do. Here we build our boilerplate basic program. And then they support all the groups throughout the state, the local groups that are trying to do this.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like you got a good uncle next to you. It's a little bigger than a big brother, but you got a big uncle over there who's got a good stick, the people that know the right words.
Oh, yeah. And they can help you navigate, like, I think in this state we have the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Grant, which you can, they will, like, a farmer who's been on his land forever or whatever is going to pass it down, but there's, like, a few acres that are just woodlands and, or like, 20, 30 acres that aren't farmable or whatever. He wants to preserve them, make sure no one sells them off. They can help them be like, yeah, we can, if you'll take this and for these tax incentives on the rest of your thing, we can get you money through the Nelson Stewardship Grant to save that for just pristine woodland, So they really do help people sort of navigate this idea of how do we keep enough of our natural environment the way it's supposed to be to make sure we're not just sort of plowing over every tree and building every parking lot we can.
Exactly. And, I'm going to make an analogy that people may or may not believe, but, we've done expansions here at the brewery and we've saved some wood from trees that we had to remove.
Mm-hmm.
We've built projects around natural things.
Oh, yeah.
And, so we've used those resources because they were here, they're important. And that's just the way that Dan and Deb are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're very conscious of the environment. So the Giving Foundation is confident, how do I say that? Cognizant.
There you go.
Took me a little bit. Of those same ideals, because they're good ideals. It's not like, but it's good stuff. So much of this stuff, it makes common sense. It's the right thing to do. Generally, it's the hardest road. It's the steepest path. It's the biggest mountain. But the rewards on the other side are just as grand.
Yeah, and I think the big takeaway I've come away with after two years with the foundation, or almost 3 years with the foundation now, is that, the folks that are working in this space and nonprofits, for the most part, and they're in it for the love of the game, for the most part. Like, they're in it for the right reasons. Like, you get to know these groups. And I know, there's people in there that are skeptical of nonprofit groups and things like that. And one of the things I came away with is, like, yeah, you invest in these projects and you invest in these people who do this work because they're going to be the ones with the most knowledge of how to move the needle on stuff like this. They're not, no one ever went I went to work at the old, conservation nonprofit to become a millionaire. It's just not populated with a lot of that.
No. And that's one of the neat things too, about a lot of these groups is, they'll have a board of directors cause they need to.
Oh yeah.
But they're, generally people who are in the biz or in a biz.
Yeah.
And, they donate their time to these groups because they have a passion for it.
Yep.
They see the purpose. Some people say you pay it forward.
Yeah.
Because someday I'll get old and I'm going to need somebody, so while I can, I give. And
yeah.
At some point, that's
going to
stop.
I'm going to need someone to put a railing in my bathroom. That's going to happen. I'm 6'3". I am going to have bad knees at some point. I already started having them. It's going to happen.
Yeah. So, it's a delayed effect. And everything that goes around comes around. So hopefully we're doing a really good job with all these groups. I'm sure I missed one out there. But, man, that's what we do. We try to make as big an impact as we can. And that's part of the Giving Foundation's ethos as well. It's like, hey, we're not going to give a one time and done. We want something to build. We want it to grow. We like synergy.
Yeah.
We like snowball effect.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it. And I think we've done a really good job with the money that we've been given to do that every year. Thanks again, Glarus Brewing Company.
Exactly. Exactly. I think I would agree with that. Well, Jason, thank you very much for your time this afternoon and giving me the lowdown on what you guys are up to and how you got to New Glarus and all things projects. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Scott. And all the listeners out there, thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Have a good one.